It's 4 minutes after 8 o'clock. Welcome to Morning Magazine for Friday, February 4th of 2022. I am your host, Rosanna Longo-Better. Thank you so much for joining us here on listener-supported community radio, coming up after headlines. In our fossil fuels transition series, we will hear about a bond measure Colorado oil and gas regulators are considering to deter well abandonment. We will also find out about an education technique known as place-based learning and how it is applied here in Boulder County. After that, on the Nature Almanac, we will take a stroll on the National Center for Atmospheric Research, Walter Orr Roberts Weather Trail, with a team of naturalists. Finally, we have our regular segment from .org, spotlighting the work of a local nonprofit every Friday. BBC Update at 8:30 and then Connections will come your way. As always, the phone lines will be open and your calls welcome. Your host this morning is Kathy Partridge with guest Julia Mavile to discuss the Colorado laws for involuntary psychiatry confinement and the need to reform practice for patients' rights and safety. And then at 9:30, the Morning Sound Alternative will bring you 2.5 hours of eclectic music until noon. All that's still ahead, all made possible by listeners members of KGNU. We begin with local news headlines with KGNU's Stacy Johnson.
Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold announced yesterday her office has ordered Douglas County Clerk and Recorder Merlin Klotz to disclose information regarding a possible breach of security protocols. Klotz is under investigation for allegedly making an unauthorized copy of his county's election system server. Klotz is the third Republican county clerk to be investigated by the Secretary of State's office. Mesa County Clerk Tina Peters and Elbert County Clerk Dallas Schroeder are also under investigation for allegedly making unauthorized copies of their county election servers. Klotz and Schroeder are among 5 plaintiffs in a recent lawsuit filed against the Secretary of State claiming the election system software used in 2020 was improperly certified and that Griswold's office illegally destroyed election records. Griswold has denied the claims against her office by asserting the lawsuit is based on multiple unfounded election conspiracy theories. Klotz has until February 10th to respond to the order. Hundreds of people gathered at the Douglas County School District in Castle Rock on Thursday to protest an alleged secret school board meeting. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
The protest was organized by the district's teachers union over the alleged school board meeting that was only attended by 4 of the 7 members of the school board. The Denver Gazette reports that the alleged meeting was attended by Mike Peterson, Christy Williams, Becky Myers, and Kaylee Weingar, who reportedly gave Superintendent Corey Wise an ultimatum to either resign or be fired. The 3 minority members of the school board said they were only informed of the ultimatum after the fact. If the 4 board members did make the decision, it would have violated the Colorado Open Meetings Law by making a unilateral personal decision without informing the entire board. The ultimatum for Wise reportedly came after a contentious meeting last week where the board voted 4-3 to make changes to the district's equity policy. Kaylee Weingar, one of the 4 board members who voted for the change, said that it was the majority's worry about the possibility of the district teaching critical race theory in Douglas County classrooms. The district announced it would hold a special meeting at 5 p.m. today at the district's Castle Rock administration office. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Boulder County has submitted a request to the Federal Emergency Management Agency to assist the communities of Superior, Louisville, and unincorporated Boulder County in funding the safe and proper removal of debris and ash caused by the December 30th Marshall Fire and windstorm. The request submitted this week seeks financial help to remove large debris, including destroyed structures, foundations, damaged trees and vegetation, and contaminated soil, which will include sampling and testing. FEMA could take 4 weeks to complete its review of the request. According to a joint statement released yesterday by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Colorado Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, federal agencies have provided more than $69 million in grants and loans to assist in the recovery from the December 30th fire and windstorm. Those affected by the disaster can still apply for FEMA assistance until March 2nd. FEMA's Mitigation Community Education and Outreach Team is also providing mitigation advice to community members at the Lowe's in Louisville until February 8th and at other home improvement retail outlets until March 1st. The Colorado Senate Agricultural and Natural Resources Committee voted down a bill yesterday that would have banned the hunting of mountain lions, bobcats, and Canadian lynx. According to the Colorado Sun, the committee's first hearing this session lasted several hours because of the amount of public testimony on the measure. The Colorado Sun reports the Humane Society supported the bill, but it faced fierce opposition by hunters, anglers, farmers, and other opponents who flooded the email inboxes of lawmakers with comments about the legislation. The debate on the measure became so contentious that three of the bill's sponsors pulled their support. The committee rejected the bill by a vote of 4-1, with a lone vote in favor of the measure coming from remaining sponsor Senator Sonia Jaquez Lewis of Boulder County. Today's weather along the Upper Metro Front Range includes sunny skies with highs in the 30s. Wind chill values will range from minus 4 in Boulder to minus 11 in Fort Collins. Tonight's skies will be mostly cloudy in Fort Collins and Boulder and mostly clear for Denver with lows in the teens. Tomorrow's forecast includes sunny skies with highs in the 40s. The current temperature outside the Boulder studios is 10 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
The Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission regulates the oil and gas industry. They have been discussing whether companies should put more money up front as a financial assurance, commonly known as a bond, to guarantee there is enough money for the state to clean up a well site if a company goes bankrupt or walks away. From KVNF, Chad Richt reports.
In 2019, the mission of the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, or COGCC, changed from fostering to regulating the oil and gas industry. One of the measures the commission is evaluating is how wells are bonded or guaranteed that they'll be cleaned up when extraction is complete. COGCC Commissioner John Messner.
The current financial assurances may not be adequate, and we need to undergo a rulemaking in order to evolve those financial assurance requirements.
If a company walks away from a site without cleaning it up, it becomes an orphan well.
And it is the state of Colorado's responsibility to address plugging, abandoning, reclamating, and remediating that particular well or operation.
Bonds for wells are like deposits for rental apartments. When the operator is done at the site, they're required to clean it up, like a tenant would an apartment. If that happens, the bond is returned to the operator. If they walk away, the state keeps the bond and becomes responsible for cleanup. The COGCC estimates it costs over $82,000 to clean up a single well, but bonds are often a fraction of that cost. Individual bonds range from $10,000 to $20,000 per well, and blanket bonds can bring down the cost to less than $1,000 per well. According to Carbon Tracker, a nonprofit that monitors financial implications around fossil fuels, that leaves nearly $7 billion in uninsured wells in Colorado. One way to guarantee operators clean up their sites is to require companies to put up bonds that cover 100% of the cleanup costs. But Lynn Granger of the American Petroleum Institute says that's not realistic.
Unfortunately, not all companies would be able to get to 100% full cost bonding, or it wouldn't make good business sense for them. And that would have a pretty devastating effect on the industry here in Colorado.
Nobody's advocating for that. It's probably true that it would be quite difficult for the vast majority of companies to come up with the full cost of their cleanup operations tomorrow.
That's Andrew Forks Gudmundson of the League of Oil and Gas Impacted Communities, or LOGIC, a Denver-based advocacy group.
We want operators to work towards that full cost bonding amount over a reasonable period of time. In some cases, that could be 5 years. In some cases, it could be 10 years. But at the end of a, you know, reasonable pay-in period, we would like every well to be covered by a full cost bond.
Out of Colorado's roughly 50,000 wells, between 400 and 500 are orphaned. That pales in comparison to the 8,000 found in Pennsylvania. Still, these sites can emit greenhouse gases like methane or leak harmful chemicals into waterways and onto soils. And oil and gas production is still on the rise. That means more wells will be drilled in the coming years and decades, even as renewables chip away at the energy sector's market share. Forks Gudmundsen of Logic says that could result in more orphan wells.
The oil and gas industry in Colorado is essentially at the whim of the global oil and gas market. The vast majority of operators plug and abandon wells through cash flow, basically as they generate revenue for their producing wells. They use that money to plug old wells. If they generate less revenue, they will have less revenue with which to plug and abandon wells when they're at the end of their life. So anything that could negatively impact the value of oil and gas could stand to negatively impact cleanup operations in the state.
As hazardous as they may be, these sites could actually provide some economic benefits to frontline communities, as the Biden administration recently approved funding for cleaning up orphan wells. Dan Brissett is with the Environment and Energy Institute, a bipartisan nonprofit that promotes sustainable societies.
Plugging wells is an economic activity, and somebody has to do it. And there is some transferability of skills between fossil fuel jobs and oil plugging jobs. So to the extent that there's any silver lining, it comes in the form of jobs.
But Brissett says it's not worth it.
You would never trade orphaned wells for oil plugging jobs.
The new rules are expected to be released the last week of February. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, I'm Chad Rich.
A climate crisis is looming over the youngest generation, and today's education models are just starting to grapple with how to teach kids about their changing world. One model is called place-based learning, and it fosters a connection between youth and nature, making them purposely aware of their surroundings. Riley Hooper and Kerry Myers have this story for the Brink series, a collaboration between KGNU and environmental studies students at CU Boulder.
Place-based learning is an approach to educating students through a framework that emphasizes personalized learning through the immersion in natural settings. The method has yet to gain a foothold in mainstream curricula, but it is a pillar at Thorn Nature Experience, an experimental organization in place-based learning founded in 1954. David Sobel is an environmental author and educator who promotes place-based learning.
What you want to do is reconnect or connect kids with the local natural and cultural worlds and use that as the basis for developing a good curriculum across the board.
Sobel realized as a college student conducting a research project on blackbirds that knowledge could emerge from places rather than books. He says there's ample evidence that immersion in nature improves learning both in physical and psychological ways.
Kids get more involved, they're more interested in the academic content, they're more invested in creating interesting products, and they develop a lifelong love and connection to the places that have prior to that were just kind of ho-hum.
Environmental education in youth, specifically place-based learning, tends to cater to upper-class individuals. Thorn Nature Experience is taking steps to serve children of all backgrounds in the Boulder area.
I personally grew up in Mexico, in urban Mexico, and I didn't get to have those moments out in nature.
That was Regina Zaragoza Frey, the Inclusiveness and Equity Manager at Thorn Nature Experience.
My idea of connecting with nature was more in line with like the majority of the world, where it's like, oh, you connect with nature maybe once a year if you're lucky and you go to a national park.
Thorn offers scholarships to kids from low-income backgrounds so that they too may receive access to place-based learning in nature. Around half of Thorn students are scholarship recipients. One of Thorne's programs, Nature Kids Lafayette, works towards ensuring all youth in the area have access to nature within a 10-minute walk and to connect ages 4 to 18 to nature through various activities such as backyard to backcountry and family integrated programs. Again, David Sobel.
What's going on in Lafayette is a great example of really good both place-based education and outdoor education, both in terms of curriculum and after-school activities, and also the way in which they've changed the infrastructure in Lafayette so that, you know, in putting in walking paths to school and putting in natural playgrounds. That's the kind of stuff that is really valuable, especially from the equity and diversity perspective.
Boulder County is famous for its access to natural spaces and trails, but it's also an expensive place to live. Fresh air comes at a price many low-income families cannot afford, says Regina Zaragoza Frey.
The kids in our Nature Kids programs, they have higher rates of asthma, for example. Like, do you think that's a coincidence? No, absolutely not. They're growing up in lower-income communities that are disproportionately impacted by climate change.
Part of place-based learning involves encouraging kids to solve their own dilemmas based on their own choices. For example, instructors wouldn't tell a student not to climb a rock, but instead ask them how they plan on getting down. David Sobel says developing this capacity for problem-solving will be key in tackling future climate challenges.
Well, what's most important for the future of the environment is that there is tangible relationships between children and the natural world. Because without that, there's no care about environmental problems or environmental issues.
Making sure that kids from all backgrounds have access to opportunities to develop these skills is something present-day adults can do now. For KGNU's The Brink Series, this is Riley Hooper and Kari Myers.
It's February. What's happening in the natural world? Here are Boulder naturalists Scott Sievers, Steve Jones, and Ruth Carol Cushman.
We're at the parking lot for the National Center for Atmospheric Research because it's the best place in Boulder, I think, to see the sunrise. You're looking right out to the east, and then you can turn your head, and there are the Flatirons covered with a little bit of snow right now.
Can you all see the howling dog on Bear Peak?
I always thought those were seals.
Well, dogs. It's officially called Seal Rock, but the public calls it the Howling Dog.
Yeah, I still think they're seals, though, Steve. We're going to go on the Walt Orr Roberts Weather Trail. That's named for the man who established NCAR, was its first director. He was a wonderful humanist as well as an outstanding world-renowned physicist. And the Weather Trail, we'll walk up and we'll read about why we get the big wind and blizzards and a lot of other things here. That hammer sound that you hear when we're walking are my walking sticks, and they're wonderful to keep you from falling. This is a great trail to take out-of-towners to because you get such beautiful views of the Flatirons and you've got those weather signs, and it's an easy trail. It's relatively flat. It's very short. It makes a little loop on the mesa. Here is an appropriate sign, wildfire, and it says, a major forest fire occurs in Boulder County every few years. One fire that began June 26, 2012, burned roughly 300 acres about 2 miles southwest of this point. I wonder if they'll update this sign for the Marshall Fire. The most dangerous fire conditions occur after wet conditions produce dense vegetation that later dries out. Warmer temperatures are allowing trees and grasses to dry out more readily during periods of drought. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, there was a little bird. Did you see what it was, Scott?
Yeah, there's a little group of pygmy nuthatches moving through the ponderosa pine. Pygmy nuthatches, I'm telling mainly by its voice, which is this high-pitched beep, 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 almost like Morse code. And when I saw them fly, they're very small.
And they go typically up or down, Scott, up and down the trunk?
White-breasted kind of land and head downward, and often you'll find the bigger nuthatch, white-breasted nuthatch, on the ground, whereas you'll find the pygmies up on the tops. Pygmies are little gray guys with bluish-gray backs and brownish-gray cap.
I think the wonderful thing about them is they're the most social. They actually snuggle up in tree cavities at night to keep warm in winter. And if they didn't do that, they might freeze. Here come the nuthatches.
The Walter Orr Roberts Trail starts on the north side of the Incar building, and there are big signs for it, so if you park on the north side of Incar, it's very easy to find it.
Ruth Carol Cushman, Scott Sievers, and Steve Jones are friends and Boulder naturalists.
Time now for .org, our regular Friday feature, spotlighting the work of a local nonprofit.
Welcome to .org, KGNU's look at local nonprofits.
This is Stacey Johnson, volunteer producer with KGNU.org. With me today is Brooke Cunningham, philanthropy manager with Neighbor to Neighbor. First off, what is Neighbor to Neighbor?
Yeah, we are a nonprofit based in Larimer County, and our core of core, heart of hearts, just mostly believes that every family should have a home. So we base all of our programs and services around helping people access and maintain stable housing.
And how do y'all do that?
Yeah, that's a great question. We have 11 different programs and services, all the way from ending and preventing homelessness through things like emergency rent assistance. We also own affordable properties. We own 132 individual units. And then we have different resources for folks living in those units and resident services. And then if we continue on the housing continuum, we also help people learn how to buy a home, because we know that home ownership is the most stable form of housing. So we try to move people into home ownership whenever we can, and help maintain those that home ownership through things like foreclosure prevention counseling and reverse mortgage counseling as well. So lots of different things, lots of different ways to do it. Just always trying to go back to that core mission of getting and keeping people housed.
And how can KGNU listeners support Neighbor to Neighbor?
One of Neighbor to Neighbor's biggest programs and most impactful programs is emergency rent assistance, where we help neighbors bridge a gap. Maybe they have a car repair that is causing them to not be able to pay their rent. So instead of that family facing eviction, Neighbor to Neighbor can step in with one-time assistance and just help that family stay housed. That obviously, giving out rent assistance is a big cost for us. So any financial donations we get goes almost exclusively to that program and just helping people maintain housing. We know that if we can prevent homelessness for families, it's not only much better for that family, but it's also much better and more cost-effective for our whole community. So financial donations make a huge impact for us. But we also have some volunteer opportunities since we do own our own properties. Obviously, there's a lot of work that comes with that. So we do a lot of volunteer things. And yeah, I think that's really the main ways to support, and just sharing with neighbors what we're doing. And the more people who know about us, the easier it will be for people when they do fall on hard times to find us too. Yeah, our website is a great resource for folks. It is the letter N as in neighbor, the number 2, the letter N as in neighbor.org. So real short and sweet, ntoin.org. And it also has not only information for how to get services, but it also has really helpful things, like if you're looking for an apartment and maybe have a budget issue or have had an eviction, we have awesome tips that our experts in the field have helped us prepare. So it's a great resource.
For their link and another listen, go to our blog at kgnu.org/dotorg.
That is all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I have been your host, Rosanna Longo-Better. Special thanks to Stacey Johnson, Steve Miller, Chad Richt, Riley Hooper, Carrie Meyer, Shelley Schlender, Scott Sievers, Steve Johns, Ruth Carl Cushman, Alexis Kenyon, and Shannon Young for their contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for Connections just after this news update from the BBC.